back, relax, and enjoy as Don Tony gives you news and reviews from AEW, NXT, and indie wrestling too.
Know what's happening in the world of wrestling without the hate and clickbait.
It's Wednesday night, Dawn-o-mite.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? You know, it's funny, right before we're live, Blood and Guts just went off the air. And I find something a little bit interesting in the chat room right now that I know for a fact we did not see last year. And you don't see comments like this all that often. And multiple people said that they enjoyed Blood and Guts tonight, the match, but it felt a little bit underwhelming. Let me tell you something. Those guys bled more tonight combined than probably any other match so far in AEW. Those guys did some crazy-ass shit, and I thought the match was a boatload of fun. I don't think it disappointed at all. But here's the problem. When everybody goes through tables, when people are always bleeding, when there's always this clusterfuck environment, you start getting numb to it. We've talked about that before. It's like someone who has never gone to a horror film before, and the first time they see it, they got to cover their eyes. They have nightmares. They're afraid of the dark. Any little sound, you know, sets them off. Then they see another one. Then they see another one. Next thing you know, it's almost every week. Just like with the themes, the names. Rampage Friday is now Royal Rampage. I get it. Battle Royal. You know, little stipulation to determine who's going to face Moxley next. But you keep making everything seem bigger and pomp and circumstance and spectacle, then it starts to be normalized. And something like this, I mean, even when the match was over, I appreciate the idea that everybody is celebrating at the top of the cage. But you got Jericho and Matt Menard laid out right next to the Blackpool Combat Club. The bitter hatred for T and Kingston towards Jericho. And for about 10 minutes, we're watching the good guys celebrate at the top of the cage, and Jericho is laid right next to him. He's got nowhere to go. What is he going to do? Just roll off the cage? So, you know, some ideas, you know, are not bad when you think about it. But you got to think about the execution also. And that looked kind of goofy. There was a couple of things about the match that was kind of goofy tonight. But overall, I mean, excellent match. Those guys worked their asses off. So, how's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to this edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. I am Don Tony, as always. Couple of things right off the bat. If you see the shirt is being worn tonight deliberately because next week, Thursday, it will not be live. It will be recorded probably Thursday during the day. The mailbag returns. I know that says Q&A with Don Tony, but I have someone making a new graphic up. It will be Thursday. So if you want to send a question in or two that you would like for me to answer on the mailbag next week, the email address is dontony@dontony.com, and get them in by 7/6/22 because Thursday during the day I'll be recording it. So just make a note of it. Also, this Saturday we have Money in the Bank. I have decided to do a very short prediction show. I was going to do it Friday night. The problem is we're doing a watch party for SmackDown. We're doing a watch party for Rampage. That means at the end of Rampage, I'll be sitting in my fat ass at this screen for 3 hours. I think it would be a little bit much to then do a live prediction show. So if you are up Saturday, not too late, not too early, join me 10 a.m. Saturday morning for some Money in the Bank predictions. not only is it going to be match predictions, we're going to predict some storylines, some swerves, some surprises. Some of them probably aren't going to come true, but there's no reason why we can't come up with some doozies. And hey, sometimes we do that and sometimes it happens. So join me Saturday, 10 a.m. for your WWE Money in the Bank predictions. And even if you don't catch it live, you know, after Money in the Bank is over, tune in to the predictions anyway. See how good we did or how bad we did. And I'm sure there's some of you out there that would love to say, DT, you got this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong. So tonight we're going to talk blood and guts. We're going to talk a little bit about NXT. We're going to give away the RK-Bro photos from last night's NXT watch party. We'll talk a little bit about NXT last night as well. A couple of things coming out of that show. And the suplex, Julius Creed. I know 99.9% of you out there would have never expected me to open up this show talking about Julius Creed. And honestly, I was not going to bring it up right away as well. But since we're on the topic, I might as well. I don't know if you guys caught it. Even if you didn't tune into NXT yesterday, did you guys catch this suplex? Or I should say suplex attempt. I cannot believe that WWE did not allow him to completely execute this move. You know, I know you're saying, DT suplex, is that a really big deal? But Julius Creed, we've talked about him before. I mean, the guy is just raw talent, but he is a little reckless. Sometimes, you know, the strength goes to his head. But he executed a suplex yesterday. Some of you said last night that Claudio Castagnoli's, the former Cesaro, has done this. I cannot remember. And I'll tell you what's, and I have the video. What's awesome about this move is if you go back and you watch it, pay attention to the crowd behind him. When you have, and this goes for indie wrestling, any wrestling show, if you're going to do one move, you're not jumping off the top of a cage. You're not going to jump through five tables. You're sitting on the mat. Your ass is planted on that canvas. And all you do is one simple suplex that gets a ton of people in the crowd off of their seat. The reason why I decided to open up with this right now is because it blows me away that 99% of the internet wrestling community has not talked about this move. All right, I'm going to show it to you right now. Julius Creed in the ring with one member of the Dyad. And he's sitting on his butt, and look what this guy does. This, look, he's sitting down. Look at this. Just look at this. I mean, just pause that for a second. He's still sitting on the mat, and he's got the member of the Dyad upside down. Now, I have labeled it the sit-down suplex. Yes, sit down, you know, sit down with yours truly. I'm sure that's probably the name of this move. But I saw this yesterday. And you go and you look at that crowd behind him. Now, he's still sitting ass on the canvas. This guy, who's probably about 220 pounds, is upside down. And look at the power of this guy. Look at the people behind him. Look, they're all getting, look, they get out. Even if it's not the whole guy, look, still gets up. The problem is, you ruined it. You ruined it, damn it. You should have let him do it. That would have been one of the moves of the year. How do you break that up? I've been watching wrestling since 1979, and I have seen some people come up with some innovative moves these days. Some people modify some famous moves. We saw recently Grayson Waller coming up with some very innovative moves that were very creative. But again, I have never seen this in my life. If you just look at, look, he's got him lifted up. He still, look, and just gets up. How do you do that? How do you do that? And unfortunately, they pulled him down. Unbelievable. Why counter that? But I have to give a little props to Julius Creed for that, because I have never seen that before. And to have that kind of strength and just balance to live someone like that, that is fucking impressive, man. Bravo, Julius Creed. All right. We got to talk a little bit about Blood and Guts first. One story we're going to hold off until this weekend. Now, since Saturday is Money in the Bank, I have decided Sunday will be the Don Tony Show. And if needed, in fact, I just decided we will split the show in half and we will do the sit down as well. So if you have any, you know, spur of the moment questions, and look, fallout from Money in the Bank the day before. So Sunday we'll do that. But we're also going to hold off from Sunday to cover this. Guys, gals, Joey Ryan tried to get a job at Disneyland. Actually, he was working a jungle ride. They had no idea of his background. And yes, he's never been found guilty of any of the sexual harassment. But talk about how some people have fallen. Look, of course he should be able to get employment. But honestly, you think I want my kid? Hey, let the jungle ride. Especially if he still sucks on those lollipops. Now, I'm not insinuating anything with kids. Please don't say I'm going there. Just imagine him hanging out, you know, just handling the rides. And then you find out later on that he's guilty of, well, accused of all those charges. Think I want my kid around somebody like that? Hell fucking no. Think I want my girlfriend, a fiance around somebody like that? Hell no. So he was canned. So, so we'll talk about that Sunday. I want to get all the details. I want to see the ride itself. This is California now. This is not Florida. This is California. So, all right. Blood and Guts. I only took one screenshot from tonight. And that's probably the best screenshot I could come up with. A lot of posed visuals for tonight, obviously. The match was excellent, but it was not the only match on the card. So let's run down Blood and Guts a little bit, and we'll get into a couple of incidentals. Oh, and I got an Aubrey Edwards clip from tonight. Now, I have to be very careful about this. I have trimmed it down to 5 seconds. And we will split those 5 seconds up into two pieces. So you cannot be flagged for 2 seconds of footage. But, you know, we always comment about the AEW refereeing. And I saw something tonight with Aubrey Edwards that I will be shocked if even one of you picked up on it. But I saw it right away and I'm like, oh my God, I cannot pass that up. I got to show you a blunder she did tonight. And look, of course people make mistakes. But, you know, when you're on the hard camera and everything you do is shown front and center, you know, you cannot do, in my opinion, what she did tonight. And I've been pretty lenient on Aubrey. I mean, the worst thing I say is she looks like she's surfing sometimes. You know, but she does do a lot behind the scenes for AEW. So, you know, she's definitely an asset for that company. But I got to show you something later. Now, this was terrible. I will agree with you all. This is terrible. I mean, I've kind of like, you know, been a little bit nicey-nicey in recent years. But, you know, we got to call shit out when it's needed. So, all right, Blood and Guts tonight. Now, something I need to tell you all. There has been a change with Jim Ross, with his commentary duties with AEW. As I wrote on Twitter tonight, it does give me some vibes from the 90s with Gordon Solie. Now, tonight on commentary, the primary commentary team was Taz, Excalibur, and Tony Schiavone. Jim Ross was not there for the entire night. However, Jim Ross did come out for the main event. And look, man, greatest commentator of all time. You know, some people will debate Gordon Solie, you know, or Jim Ross. You could flip-flop either one and you're not wrong. You know, but in his latter years, he does have his share of mistakes. Now, of course, when you know Cesaro for so many years, you get a flub and you get to call him Cesaro. It was a couple of times tonight that Jim Ross called Taz Excalibur. Excalibur, Taz, Tony Schiavone's the regular team. Jim Ross will still be used, but Jim Ross is going to be used more for main events, more meaningful matches, more high-profile matches. He will be brought in for that. They are using him for Rampage on Friday as well. So they basically what they're doing is they're just easing up Jim Ross's duties a little bit. And again, it reminds me of Gordon Solie. Now, for some of you out there, probably most of you, because I am old now, most of you out there probably did not experience Gordon Solie's commentating in the 90s. Now, he passed, I think, in 2000. But in the early 90s, Gordon Solie was not really a play-by-play guy anymore for WCW, NWA. And what they would do is they would have him come out for certain matches. One of my favorite, and I have brought this up over the last 25 years doing hotlines and shows, one of my favorite Gordon Solie moments of all time. And guys, please stop with the chat about, you know, other podcasters and stuff. There's nothing going on. Just stop. You know, we don't want to start muting anyone, but, you know, other people try to trigger podcast wars. Talking about it doesn't calm it down. So please, I ask you that as a favor. So, too much going on to be bogged down with drama and hate and stuff like that. So, but one of my favorite moments of Gordon Solie's latter career, and I think I brought this up maybe 2 weeks ago, him and Bobby Heenan doing commentary, I think in 1994, was it 94? In Philly, it was Slamboree. I don't remember if it was Slamboree, but it was a WCW event, and it was Terry Funk versus Tully Blanchard. And this was, you know, right at the beginning of ECW, you know, becoming a phenomenon. And just, I if you remember my history show, I have the audio on it, and the episode is still online. You close your eyes. Seriously, even if you have the video, you close your eyes and just listen to the commentary. Terry Funk versus Tully Blanchard with Bobby Heenan and Gordon Solie on commentary. And if you don't watch the video and you close your eyes, you can actually suspend disbelief enough that you think you're in the ECW arena. You think that it's an ECW match because they were fighting a little bit hardcore. They brawled into the crowd. You hear the crowd chanting, ECW, ECW. So if you really want to feel like surreal and just imagine, this is the closest you would have ever gotten of Bobby Heenan and Gordon Solie commentating in ECW. It is one of my favorite memories of all time. You got to go check it out. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. But Gordon Solie, as his career wound it down, they would bring him in for specific matches, usually more high-profile matches. They would bring him in for some a little drips and drabs here and there. And then, unfortunately, he phased out, and then he, you know, had the issues with his throat, and, you know, he got sick and he passed away. So Jim Ross, they're going to scale back a little bit of his work. And that might be just temporary. You know, Jim Ross just recently battled skin cancer. And, you know, he's got some issues health-wise. So this is probably a good thing overall for everybody involved. So, all right. Blood and Guts opened up tonight with Orange Cassidy defeating Ethan Page. Now, Orange Cassidy has new music, old music, but it's new. What's old is new again. Some of you out there, I guarantee you have heard this song. I have heard this song a trillion times over the years. Here in New York, we had, what, WNEW, 92.3, K-Rock, even though K-Rock was more contemporary rock, but there used to be a band called Jefferson Starship, and they were very, very popular in the 70s, and they had a song called Jane. And Orange Cassidy is coming out to that song now. And I tell you, I love the way that sounds for him a hell of a lot more than the music for Jungle Boy. I mean, I understand why the fans pop for it, you know, especially if you know the lyrics. But I kind of dig this music, not because I'm a fan, big fan of classic rock, but this brings me back to the indie days. It brings me back to the ECW days. It brings me back to some promotions that would use commercial music without permission. Now, of course, Tony Khan got permission to use this, but, you know, you go back and the Steiners are using Guns N' Roses in ECW, and, you know, you had Eddie Gilbert using Hot Stuff in, what, NWA? Donna Summer's Hot Stuff? Shit, Ravishing Rick Rude used to come out to Sade Smooth Operator. Now, how many of you over the years, even if you weren't born yet, sitting in like a doctor's office and you hear Smooth Operator, Smooth Operator? Ravishing Rick Rude coming out to that. I mean, just picture it if you've never seen it. So those days, having commercial music and wrestlers coming out, kind of missed that. ECW did it like crazy. And the reason why I bring up ECW is they're really the last promotion that got away with it. XPW too. But XPW obviously was nowhere as popular as ECW. So anyway, Orange Cassidy beats Ethan Page. The beginning of the match, and I thought this was funny, Dan Lambert gets best friends ejected from ringside because they don't have a manager's license. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's fine for tonight, but almost every match that we watch on AEW television has people at ringside that are not managers. So, you know, it looks kind of goofy when Dan Lambert does it. But if you want to play devil's advocate, if I'm out there to, you know, support whoever is in my team that's in the ring, then I may not want to complain about the opposite side having someone at ringside because then I may get ejected as well. So, very, very good match. Orange Cassidy, no question, one of the most over guys in AEW. I mean, there's obviously some things that rub us the wrong way, but the guy is talented. And that match that he had on Forbidden Door. I'm trying to get Forbidden Door out of my mind. Please, AEW, you have to stop with the New Japan stuff, all right? For 3 weeks, you forced it down our throats. You forced Ring of Honor down our throats. Yes, they're having a pay-per-view in July. And then what? Is it just one event every 3-4 months? Is that what Ring of Honor is going to be for the foreseeable future? That's like if WWE just decided, hey, let's do a WCW pay-per-view. You know, and then you bring bring wrestlers out there that work for WWE, and then you don't do anything else for 4 months. You know, you got to do a little bit more than that. But, Orange Cassidy, you know, the guy does work pretty well. And the match tonight, you know, crowd loved it. It was a fun match, and Orange Cassidy gets the win. No complaints there. Christian comes out, and Christian apologizes. Well, we knew he wasn't, but he comes out, and he says that upper management requested that he go out and apologize to the fans, especially for the comments he made last week about Jungle Boy's father. And Christian looks at the camera. He's being drowned out by boos and asshole chants. He looks at the camera and he says, I am sorry, Jungle Boy. I am sorry that your entire family isn't dead. And then he takes it back. He says, oh, everybody except for your mother. So I guess they're going to go with a storyline where Christian is going to physically probably try to hit on Jungle Boy's mother. You think they would ever go Diamond Dallas Page route where he stalks Jungle Boy's mother? You think that AEW would dare do something like that? Isn't it pretty interesting that Christian has basically replaced MJF as the asshole, like just dirtbag on the mic? I mean, look, MJF comes back. He picks up his throne. He is not dethroned. But, yeah, some people are like, there ain't no way that they're going to let him come out there and do that. But still, Christian, you know, just pissing off the fans even more. But then we get a little surprise tonight. Christian announces that he requested a match tonight, but he's in his street clothes. The match was not for him. It was for Luchasaurus. Luchasaurus comes out, has a mask now all in black, and he squashes Serpentico. And commentators, why Luchasaurus? Why? He has gone to the dark side. Now, not trying to be a jerk, but who the hell cares that Luchasaurus destroyed Serpentico? Please, drop him on his head. Seriously, you know, rip his eyes out. You know, cut his feet off. Just so we don't have to see Serpentico anymore. You're doing us a favor, Luchasaurus. I mean, I don't mean that literally, but, you know, he takes out Serpentico. I mean, you'd think that AEW would put like a true baby face that the fans give a shit about. Hell, I would have even taken Fuego del Sol for all that matter. But he destroys Serpentico, and for now, it appears that Luchasaurus is, he's being misguided by Christian. Now, we'll see what happens when Jungle Boy returns and he has that confrontation with Luchasaurus. So, all right. Next, backstage, and by the way, not too many matches tonight because Blood and Guts takes an hour. So, you know, what we're getting into tonight, except for Blood and Guts, that this took up half the show. Wardlow has a backstage segment with Scorpio Sky, and they agree to not get physical with each other. You know, Wardlow last week, Scorpio Sky, when you're healed, I want that title. 7 days later, you know, fuck the healed. I want your title. I want every member of the America's Top Team. Feed them all to me. This is Sinat. And Scorpio Sky says, you want this TNT title? No problem. Next week, we fight for the TNT title in a street fight. So next week, we get Wardlow versus Scorpio Sky for the TNT title. Street fight. So you know there's going to be multiple people getting involved in this match. The only thing is, would you have Wardlow lose again? Especially with what just went down, building up to his match with MJF? No disqualifications. So either Wardlow wins that championship next week, or Wardlow is going to get a dick loss, to say it bluntly. I don't want to see Wardlow get another L under his record for the foreseeable future. No. So, you know, you kind of feel like Scorpio Sky is going to be losing his title. So, all right, Danhausen with two mystery partners versus Max Caster, Austin Gunn, and Colton Gunn. Get ready for the Aubrey Edwards clip. Fact, we'll get this banner off the screen for a moment. We need the full screen to show you. All right, so Max Caster comes out, Anthony Bowens, Billy Gunn, the Ass Boys. They cut a promo, you know, throwing shade to Detroit, Flint with their water, and, you know, throwing shade to their opponents. So Danhausen comes out.
Oh, I see. I got to have two opponents. Yeah.
FTR comes out. Crowd loves it. Pretty good match. Crowd loved it. The end was pretty funny. Towards the end of the match, Aubrey Edwards is distracted. Now, Anthony Bowens has been in a wheelchair for quite some time because of legit surgery, injury. But apparently Anthony Bowens is just about ready to return to the ring. So before the match started, he comes down in a wheelchair. But towards the end of the match, he gets out of the wheelchair. He picks up a crutch and he gets in the ring. And he is going to strike Danhausen, but inadvertently wails Austin Gunn in the head with the crutch. So Anthony Bowens ultimately gets out of Dodge. The crutch gets out of Dodge. And Danhausen and FTR get the win. After the match is finished and it's done, Austin Gunn little bit pissed off. He just got whacked in the head with a crutch, and he's getting angry at Anthony Bowens. Now, if you've been watching all of their skits for the last 6 weeks, you know that Billy Gunn has been favoring the Acclaimed over his own sons, you know, his own family. So when Austin Gunn starts getting angry, really pissed off at Anthony Bowens, here's Billy Gunn throwing his own family to the floor, and he's taking the side of the Acclaimed. So it was funny. Mike in the chat room says they tried to cover it up by saying friendly fire. Listen, I want to make it clear. Anthony Bowens did not screw up. Austin Gunn, Dan Allen. Nobody screwed up except for Aubrey Edwards. All right, I'm going to show it to you. I picked up on it, and I'm like, this is too good for me not to screenshot it. All right. So, like I said, it's only 5 seconds long, and I have to split it in two so we don't have any issues here. Where are you? Okay, here it is. All right. So let's put it on the screen. There is Anthony Bowens.
He's about to hit Danhausen.
And there you see Austin Gunn. Now, Aubrey Edwards is not on your screen yet, but she is to the right being distracted. Now, keep in mind, this is not, you know, like no DQ or anything like that. So Anthony Bowens misses Danhausen and whacks Austin Gunn. There you go. Boom. Now, the whole idea with this is that Aubrey Edwards doesn't see what Anthony Bowens did. That is cheating, disqualification. So now after he hits Austin Gunn, I want you to pay very close attention to Aubrey. Okay, see Aubrey? She is looking distracted outside the ring still. So now, here's the thing. Anthony Bowens was supposed to throw the crutch out of the ring, and the referee was not supposed to see the crutch, but he was going to exit the ring as well. Unfortunately, Aubrey screwed up, and Anthony Bowens was not at the point yet to throw the crutch out. So I want you to pay very close attention to Aubrey Edwards when she spots Anthony Bowens and she spots the crutch. Look at it closely. That's it. She looks up. I'll just look the other way again. Look, watch it again. Watch. I got to pause it. Now watch it. She looks. She sees it, and she's like, oh, fuck. And she just looks the other way. Watch. Look at her. Look. Oh, I see it. I didn't see nothing. I didn't see nothing. Look. I didn't see nothing. That is fucking awful. You're on a hard camera. If you spot him, even if it's the wrong cue, you gotta look at the crutch and do looks like this. Like, she didn't see the actual shot, but she could be like, get out of here, or something like that. She looks at him and she's like, it's like the mafia. When the mafia does some deal in the street and then some like witness sees something and then he realizes that it's the mafia that just committed the crime. Oh, tell me what you saw. Oh, I saw nothing. I didn't see nothing. What are you talking about? I didn't see nothing. What do you mean? What are you talking about? Hey, how you doing? You know, I was just walking down the bridge, getting a little bit of sunset, and I see these two Italians. Hey, how you doing? And they're just looking out the pier. Hey, how you doing? I didn't see nothing. I didn't see anybody go off the cliff. By the way, Two Dimes went on Twitter today and said, hey, I know how to swim. Rest in peace, Two Dimes. You broke my heart. Tony D'Angelo, don't try too hard. You sound like you're from Massachusetts. I know what he's trying to do. He's Italian. He's like, hey, Two Dimes, you broke my heart. You screwed up. You want my position? Now you sleep with the fishes. We said for 3 weeks in a row, he sleeps with the fishes. But he tries too hard. And yesterday he's like, you broke my heart. You sound like you're from Massachusetts. Shut the fuck up. And I say that with love. But, you know, I didn't see nothing. Hey, Aubrey, what happened there? I didn't see nothing. I didn't see nothing. You didn't see nothing. So, moving on. We get another backstage segment man, that Ring of Honor TV title, you know, is so important. We have 3 weeks in a row of Satnam Singh, Sanjay Dutt, and Jay Lethal. Hey, Samoa Joe, you're so lazy. You're not defending that title, blah, 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 blah. That fucking title's not going to be defended till July. We're going to keep seeing these segments week after week after week. This is a promotion that's dead. Yeah, it's coming back for a pay-per-view. That's dead. It's still a dead promotion. Jim Crockett Promotions is coming back for one night only. Hopefully to not see a tragedy in the middle of the ring with, woo! Just being honest. Layla Gray challenges Jade Cargill for the TBS Championship. If she looked familiar, for some of you out there, she has been seen on WWE television several times in recent months, I guess you could say. You might remember she was Kat Cardoza on SmackDown the end of April. She faced Raquel Rodriguez in Raquel Rodriguez's SmackDown debut. That was her, the same Layla Gray that you saw tonight. You might remember on NXT 2 weeks ago, for my friends that frequent the watch party, you remember us laughing our ass off about this segment with Grayson Waller, and he's talking to just random people in the back, and they're all like over the top with their gestures and everything. Anybody remember? Hey, cool Aaliyah shirt, by the way. Absolutely cool Aaliyah shirt. Very cool. But a lot of you remember this, right? That's her in the orange. That is her in the orange. All the people there were independent wrestlers. In fact, that extremely high school graduate one, she's in the back wearing the blue. So, yeah, that is a dope Aaliyah shirt. Wow, remember that with Aaliyah? Wow, so sad, man. So, she faced Jade Cargill tonight, lost. After the match is over, we have Stokely gets on the mic. And first of all, Jade Cargill says, you know, give me real competition. And Stokely is like, Athena, you're not overlooked. You're just lazy. So Athena and Chris come out and they start going to blows a little bit with Kiera Hogan and Jade Cargill. And lo and behold, because Red Velvet, see, in order to be a baddie, you cannot be an injuredy. So if you get hurty, you are outy as a baddie. So because Red Velvet's got an injury, she is out as a baddie, and now they need a replacement. Well, they have decided to go with Miss Layla Gray. Layla Gray, you know, look, she's not bad. I mean, there are a lot of videos of her on YouTube. She's not in the business that long. She's from my neck of the woods, by the way. She's from Queens, for real. And she is very, very hard worker. So, you know, she fought Jade moments earlier. Now she is trying to align with them. Stokely likes her. Jade Cargill is like, no. And Kiera Hogan is like, I don't think so. But, you know, AEW is. Give it a week or two. And Layla Gray. Hey, you know, that doesn't sound like a porn name. I mean, I understand why you say that, but there's a lot of people that sound like porn names. You don't think Kat Cardoza doesn't sound like a porn name? Most of them do. All right, we get another backstage segment. And look, I know the match is going to be good. There's no question it's going to be good. This is because we talked about it on Sunday. Many of these New Japan wrestlers that came to the United States, they didn't come here for just Forbidden Door. They're going to work various promotions and then head back. And AEW wanted Yoshihashi and Goto to wrestle against the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks wanted to wrestle them. When we talk about bucket list matches, this is another one of those. They are going to fight on Rampage this Friday. It's not for the tag titles, though. If they win, they get a future tag title shot. So, you know, I don't expect them to be sticking around that much longer after this. If they win Friday, it's very possible they may wrestle again on Dynamite next week. But I personally think having them face the Young Bucks two times in 4 days is an awful lot. So we'll see what happens. So now we get to Blood and Guts. And I guess we could put this graphic back on the screen. William Regal is on commentary. Jim Ross comes out for some commentary. William Regal mentions that he fought Moxley once and Moxley ripped, I think he said, his earlobe off. He also said that his last ever match in the ring was against Claudio, which I honestly completely forgot about that. So it's very, very interesting. They're also name dropping a few people from their past. William Regal and Jim Ross name drop Steve Austin. I don't know why they couldn't call him Steve. They would just say Austin. And then William Regal brings up his former tag partner, Squire Dave Taylor, which was very cool. Dave Taylor, very underrated. Anybody remember the Blue Bloods with the Earl of Eaton? Claudio and Sammy open it up. And the crowd, again, Sammy Guevara, biggest heel in that company, probably next to MJF and Christian right now. Fuck you, Sammy. And Sammy trolling the fans. At one point, because Blood and Guts is two rings together, Sammy's trying to get away from Claudio, so he climbs the rope and jumps from one top rope to the other top rope to the other side of the ring just to get away from Claudio, showboating. Crowd is eating it up. They're cursing Sammy out big time. Wheeler Utah is the next member. Jericho Appreciation Society, with their win at Forbidden Door, got the one-man advantage for most of tonight. So Claudio and Sammy start off. Personally, if you get the one-man advantage, you know, I know what you're going to say. You know, maybe it's not that smart, but you know what? It does knock off a couple of minutes of time. I would start the match off with a two-on-one. I mean, I know you want to showcase two people to go at it a little bit, but I would, you know, do the one-man advantage, start off with two-on-one. You know, somebody could get laid out almost immediately, and then you have two people go at it. But, you know, we have Claudio and Sammy, and then Daniel Garcia is the next one. And by the way, Daniel Garcia was the first one to bleed tonight. A lot of people bled. Claudio did not bleed. I don't think Eddie Kingston bled either. I do not recall Eddie Kingston bleeding. I mean, obviously I didn't take screenshots, but Claudio definitely did not bleed tonight. Wheeler Utah, then Jake Hager are next, and some nice, fun nostalgia. Jake Hager, Claudio, stare down, going at it. Remember, we the people. Very, very cool. Moxley is in next. He comes in with a chair. Then he whips out a fork, and he is digging into Daniel Garcia's head with it. Angelo Parker, he's in next, but he doesn't want in. He is afraid, but he gets his fucking ass kicked. Then we watch some fun segments. Moxley, Yuta, and Claudio with an uppercut party to Daniel Garcia. Ortiz is in next, and I got to tell you, Ortiz without the hair, man, he looks, I don't want to say that he's not intimidating. I'm not trying to say that. But if you actually look at him now, shaved, wearing his clothes, he just looks like a guy you would just like see like on the corner of a street during the day. Like there's something missing with Ortiz. It's not the hair, you know, like of course the hair is missing, but there's something about him that he just looks, I don't know, like an indie child, like somebody just breaking into wrestling. I don't, there's something about it that I don't like. And remember Ortiz for quite some time when AEW first started, Ortiz was my favorite wrestler. Don't forget that. So next up was Matt Menard. And unfortunately, we started to get some crazy ass bleeding. Now, I'm not saying unfortunately, but like I said, when you keep doing this, people get numb to it. And some of those guys were bleeding like pigs tonight. Moxley's laceration from Sunday opened up again. You had Matt Menard. I mean, my God, Angelo Parker. I showed you. There was only one screenshot I took tonight, and that was him upside down. That's not Daniel Garcia. That's Angelo Parker. There was one point, and damn it, it was done during a pitcher-in-pitcher. John Moxley takes out broken glass. Now, I don't know if it was sugar glass or not, but They take out broken glass and he pile drove Angelo Parker on the glass. And when people were talking about him, like, I don't remember that spot. And then somebody said, yeah, it was pitcher in pitcher. So I think it was pitcher in pitcher. But I went back and there was some people posted the clip online. So I saw it. Pretty cool. So Santana is in next. And let me tell you something. Of all the weapons tonight, there was one that I loved the most. And there was one that I laughed at the most. Any of you ever eaten with chopsticks? Okay. Once in a while, I attempt to eat with chopsticks when I take my fiance to a Japanese restaurant. I don't eat fish, but I'll have like an avocado or chicken or something like that. But, you know, you try to use the chopsticks to try to be impressive. If you ever pick up a pair of chopsticks, usually the wooden ones, there's no sharp edges at the end. You know, it's usually just rounded off and, you know, you could still poke it into things and eat it. But when you have shish kebabs, it's a totally different story. I worked at my dad's store for many, many years and have put together shish kebabs. One side of the shish kebab is a razor point because when you make shish kebabs, you got to be able to shove it into the meat. You put the meat, you put the onions, the peppers, add more meat, you put other vegetables, and then you finish it off with a cherry tomato or a piece of lemon, depending on what kind of meat you put in there. He whips out a whole bunch of of shish kebab skewers. Thing is, though, is we didn't see the bottom. So I'm assuming that they cut off the bottom pieces. But when they showed, like, Moxley simulating that he was digging it into his head, you know, I have seen indie shows where people will actually show you with the tips going into someone's forehead, and that shit is, that is a visual. That is a, so I loved the skewers tonight. My favorite weapon tonight was the skewers. My least favorite weapon of the night was the rubbing alcohol. Man, that was an epic fail. First of all, we had Jericho gets in there. Eddie Kingston gets in there, you know, to round it out. Eddie Kingston gets a Singapore cane. He starts whacking Jericho with it. Jericho's trying to get out of the cage, but the cage is locked. So Eddie's whacking him with the Singapore cane. Then Eddie whips out from his pocket a bottle, which we're supposed to believe is rubbing alcohol. Of course it was water. But still, beautiful visual. You might remember me with the comet with Low Life Louie? I mean, that was a crazy-ass visual. You know, when we did that and he's got, you know, open wound on his head and he's gushing out blood and you think that comet, the cleaner, is going in his head. You know, people were chanting holy shit when they saw that. So he whips out rubbing alcohol and he's about to try to pour it all over Jericho. But here comes Jake Hager to stop it. Or was it Daniel Garcia? Hold on. I don't want to make a mistake. Oh, yeah, it was Jake Hager. Jake Hager stops it. But then we had a really goofy segment. Somehow Ty Conti had a bottle of rubbing alcohol also. And she's trying to shove it through the fence. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever had a wire fence, you know, or you maybe went somewhere and there was a wire fence. You know, if the opening is this big, I don't want to say it. Just envision a certain body part. You probably could spread it open a little bit. There's actually two body parts you can think about, you know. All right, the mouth. You could spread it open a little bit. Unfortunately, wire fence does not bend. It does not flex. So she's literally taking a bottle of rubbing alcohol and she's trying to shove it through the fence. And they have the camera right on it and she can't do it because unfortunately, the fence is not going to bend more. This isn't a vagina. It's not a bunghole that it could, like, give a little bit. So the bottle gets stuck. She's squeezing it, pushing it. It pops open. You see alcohol going on Jericho, and I'm like, oh, my God. Not even the stupidest blonde in my neighborhood would say, hey, let me shove this bottle of alcohol. Oh, man, that was funny. There was another funny part also where Jericho had a fire extinguisher. And if you go back and watch it again, Jericho starts, you know, shooting the fire extinguisher. This was right before Ty Conti got the keys for the cage. And Jericho's shooting a fire extinguisher, and John Moxley realizes, oh, fuck, I'm too far away. And while Jericho's shooting a fire extinguisher, Moxley just walks right into it. You go back and watch it, you'll see it. So, look, like I said, these guys worked their ass off, and I enjoyed the match, and some of the spots were awesome, but there was it had its share of goofy moments as well. Wheeler Yuta and John Moxley take out two big bags of thumbtacks. Hey, Wheeler, you know, how's about showing a little bit more energy? You know, he looked like a child where somebody, like if you have a child helping you clean, and you're like, pour that liquid on the floor. And you're just like, you know, can I go now? That's what it looked like. Show a little energy. Get pumped up. You're pouring thousands of thumbtacks on the mat. And he's pouring, and he's just walking around. It looked like Suzuki, Minoru Suzuki Sunday. His partner's getting his ass kicked in the ring, and he's walking around ringside like, hey, what's everybody doing after the show? So, ultimately, Ty Conti lays out Aubrey Edwards, gets the key, opens the cage, and here comes Ruby Soho. Is Ruby Soho going to be a member of the Blackpool Combat Club? Do they need a female member? Just throwing it out there. Anyway, Ruby Soho comes out there. She's brawling with Ty Conti. I think a lot of people forgot that Ty Conti does know how to wrestle. By the way, you know, someone in AEW started sending me some photos to give away on these shows. I got an email from him today that he's sending me a few Ty Conti photos autographed and a couple of Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy photos. So when I get them, we'll do some giveaways. And don't forget, later on, we're doing a giveaway as well. So she opens the cage. Now we start taking the action to the top of the cage. Jericho climbs the cage. Eddie Kingston is right behind him. They're brawling on the top of the cage. Eddie bites Jericho's ear, hits the Judas effect. And here comes Sammy. And you're getting bad vibes. Sammy Guevara climbing that cage. You get bad vibes, obviously. And you see that there's this structure outside the ring. They did a good job to not put a lot of focus on the structure, but it was outside the ring. So Sammy's at the top of the cage. Eddie ultimately hits a low blow on Sammy. Sammy, very incapacitated from the low blow. And Eddie teases that he's going to throw Sammy off of the cage. And he tosses Sammy over, and Sammy does a moonsault, pretty much, through a whole structure on the bottom. Couple of tables, you know, complete with pillows and lots of covering. Of course, you want that. You don't want the guy, you know, to get seriously injured. But he hit it beautifully. I mean, as crazy and sometimes as stupid as this guy is with some of his spots, that actually went off pretty damn well. I mean, you know, Rikishi, when he went off that cage, he went into like a barn of hay, if you remember. He just went poof. He just fell backwards. This at least, you know, looked beautiful going over, but he's out now. So now Claudio climbs the cage, and for a few moments we had Claudio doing the Cesaro swing, or just swing now, the Claudio swing, whatever you want to call it, to Jericho atop the cage. Now if you go back and you watch it, there was only one part of the cage that was really reinforced, and everybody that was doing moves was, they had to stay on that side of the cage. But Claudio with that Cesaro swing on the top of the cage, which, you know, very, very cool to see, but you get a little nervous. You know, I mean, physics is physics. I spin around 10 times. You know, I'm like this. You know, sooner or later, Cesaro, just by health, might start getting wobbly. And, you know, obviously your first instinct is go on your knees. Don't, like, think, like, where am I? So that was a nice visual. Matt Menard climbs the cage. He attempts a pile driver. And to play off on the history with Eddie Kingston and Claudio, Eddie puts the stretch lock on Jericho. Claudio has a sharpshooter on Matt Menard. And Matt Menard ultimately taps out first, which I kind of disagree with because I thought the whole idea of this was Jericho. They finally get their revenge on Jericho, but Jericho did not tap. So Matt Menard tapped, which means Claudio got the win. And Eddie Kingston, you know, a little bit mad, a little bit angry. He had a submission on Jericho, but here comes Claudio hitting his own submission, and Claudio got the submission before Eddie Kingston could. But after the match, I don't know if you saw it closely. I don't know if Eddie Kingston legitimately got a back injury. But, you know, if you read Eddie Kingston's lips, Claudio was going to lift Eddie Kingston's hand in the air. And I read Eddie Kingston's lips, and he said something like, you know, no, don't do it, my back, but I'm okay. I'll be able to climb off, but my back. It didn't look like it was part of the script, you know, because, you know, he still ultimately lifted his arm at the end, but you could see that he was in a lot of legitimate pain. But again, they're posing on the top, and here's Jericho and Matt Menard laid out, and they're up there for 10 minutes. They have that kind of anger in storyline with Jericho. You're standing right next to him. You throw Sammy off the cage, but you're just standing next. They're not gloating. They're not taunting him. They're not doing that. They're just standing there as if he wasn't there, which was kind of goofy, to be honest with you. Yeah, a few people are saying that Eddie looked legitimately hurt. You know, he's got some back issues, but he's a tough son of a bitch, man. And the fans know it, and that's why the fans love him so much. So this Friday on Rampage, they're calling it the Royal Rampage because there's going to be a 20-man Battle Royal, and the winner of that Battle Royal is going to be the first opponent for Jon Moxley for the interim championship. So it makes you wonder, could they do Kingston? Could it be a member of the Blackpool Combat Club? Why would the Blackpool Combat Club even want to participate in a match like that? I know Regal will go on commentary and make a good explanation for it, but, you know, you got to think who would be the first ideal opponent for Jon Moxley. We're also going to get Nyla Rose versus Toni Storm and the Young Bucks versus Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi. It's not a title match. It's more of a championship contenders match. And then next week, all they have advertised so far is Wardlow versus Scorpio Sky street fight for the TNT championship. Oh, also tonight, I'm going to give you quick predictions for the Great American Bash. It's only six matches. I think it's pretty easy to predict. So before we do that, let's talk a couple other things. First of all, before we get into NXT, this is sort of related to NXT, but I think you want to see this first. Any of you out there that follows mixed martial arts, you probably have heard of someone by the name of Valerie Lareda. Lareda, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. WWE has signed her to a deal, and she will be training to appear in NXT. So today she went on social media. We have a couple of more pictures of her. We went on social media, and she says, quote, "I am honored to become the first Cuban-American woman in history to sign with WWE. I come from a family of immigrants. Now it's my time to represent our Latin culture. I was destined for this. Thank you for this opportunity, WWE. I will make you proud." Triple H made a comment today and said, quote, "An incredibly driven young woman working hard in sport and business to make a name for herself and for her family. Cannot wait to have Valerie start training at the Performance Center and make her impact in NXT." Welcome to WWE. So, Valerie Lareda is signed. I know for some of you that are fans of MMA, you know who she is. And she will start training immediately. Don't know how it's going to work out. I'm not aware of any wrestling background. I did a little research earlier today. Couldn't find anything either. But she is now part of WWE. NXT. Before we get into Great American Bash predictions, a couple of tidbits from yesterday. Now, I'm going to be a semi-perverted old man for a minute. Lighthearted, nothing perverse about it. But since this always becomes a topic amongst podcasts and because of the controversy with Mandy Rose and Athena and, you know, about booties and booty shorts and stuff like that, I was mentioning this in the watch party yesterday. You know, everybody talks about certain women's booty in wrestling. And latest, the person that we see talked about a lot is Kira Hogan and her booty. I have a booty for you that I think is very underrated that people do not talk about. And I'm saying this lighthearted, please. I don't want anybody to call me a creep. But when I mention it and I show you who it is, you start paying attention to it. You're going to be like, holy shit, DT. Holy shit. Caden Carter has a very underrated booty. Booty time. Booty time, booty time, across the USA, booty time. Anybody knows why I'm singing that? Much love, much respect from me. Caden Carter, underrated booty. A booty. All right, matches from yesterday. Giovanni Vinci. You remember, you know, we thought that AEW. I didn't realize how great my tweet aged. 5 days before Forbidden Door, I said that AEW ordered Cesaro on Wish. They ended up getting the real thing. They canceled their order from Wish. They actually ordered it directly from the manufacturer. But you look at Giovanni Vinci in NXT, even in the ring, with the exception of the posing and the snapshots, to me, it reminds me of too much of Cesaro. Reminds me a lot of Cesaro. So Giovanni Vinci beats Ikemen Hiro. We had for the number one contenders for the NXT Tag Team Championships, Cora Jade. Oh, people are canceling me now because I brought up booty. Booty! 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 Come on, a New Day talk about booty. We're not being perverse about it. I didn't even show you an ass shot. You don't think that I was tempted to like show an actual booty shot? Katana Chance is like, I see you looking at that booty. I see you. I know when you're looking at that booty. We had a number one contenders match yesterday. Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez beating Caden Carter and Katana Chance. So Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade will face Toxic Attraction Tuesday for the tag titles. I don't want to reveal my prediction yet, but we all agreed last week that since Katana Chance and Caden Carter fought at In Your House, there was no reason for them to fight a second time, you know, for the tag titles in a row. Joe Gacy and the Dyad over Roderick Strong and the Creed Brothers. We've been talking about Roddy turning on the Creed Brothers, and when they lost yesterday because of miscommunication, you know, the Creeds have it won. Roderick tags himself in. Faux pas, Dyad get the win. Roderick Strong announces that he and Damon Kemp are going to face the Creed Brothers, a Great American Bash for those tag titles. That was a match that we said 2 weeks ago was going to happen. So now it is going to happen. And the beginning of the end of Roderick Strong and Diamond Mine is in full effect. So next week, Creed Brothers retain. The following week or two is probably Roderick Strong's swan song as far as Diamond Mine goes. So we've already talked about that. Sanga over Zion Quinn. And look, we've been talking about Sanga, you know, very, very polite. in the back, sitting at the bar, dressed fancy. I guess WWE feels that him dressed in a suit wrestling is too heelish. Yesterday, they had him wrestle in like a Goldberg outfit. I mean, this guy is a big motherfucker, but I don't like this look at all. I mean, he had some class and some style wearing the suit. And it doesn't look like Joe Gacy. I don't want anybody to say like, well, Joe Gacy kind of wears the pants and the dress shirt. No. I mean, this guy is a big mofo, but wearing just the Goldberg, and we pointed it out yesterday too. If you look at his boots, he has his initials drawn in white magic marker. I mean, that's what you do on the indies. This guy has been in NXT for how long? And you don't get boots stitched with your letters? I mean, then again, maybe he fears he's going to be released. So why get it stitched? You leave, then you can't. You don't have those initials anymore. I don't think those are his real initials. But he won yesterday. And it was funny afterwards in the back. We were joking that for the last 2 weeks, I guess the diner was closed. So Apollo was not featured. But here we get Apollo backstage with Zion Quinn. And Apollo's dressed in the same clothes. He's in his diner clothes. He's not even wrestling Great American Bash. Unless maybe they add the match last minute. Kiana James over Indy Hartwell. And Nikita Lyons. A match unannounced. I don't know why WWE did not announce this in advance. But Nikita Lyons took on Mandy Rose. Nikita won by DQ with interference from Toxic Attraction. And that pretty much was your episode. Now, as I showed you earlier, they did a segment where you had Tony D'Angelo and Stacks on a bridge playing off that Two Dimes tried to take Tony D'Angelo's spot, you know, in the family. And as a result, he was whacked. He sleeps with the fishes. They threw his items into the water. And then, unfortunately, Two Dimes went on social media and says, yeah, I know how to swim. I know how to swim. So that was a segment yesterday. Now, another thing that we want to bring up also are these two guys, Brooks and Jensen, NXT UK tag team champions. Now, a lot of you out there are like, that's a little odd. You know, NXT UK, Brooks and Jensen, why? You look at all those talented tag teams in the UK. Why would you do that? Well, I was thinking about something yesterday, and I think this may be happening. I think Pretty Deadly's number days in NXT United States are numbered. I think Pretty Deadly may be going back to the UK. And I have a feeling that they are setting up the match between Pretty Deadly and Brooks and Jensen. So Pretty Deadly wins those NXT UK tag titles and they take them back to the UK. You know, I said a few times, I would have loved to have seen Pretty Deadly in the Maximum Male Models, but I'm now thinking that Pretty Deadly's days in the United States might be numbered. I have this weird vibe that they're going to win the NXT UK titles off of Brooks and Jensen, then head back to the UK. We're taking these babies home where they belong, and then they go back to the UK. Two other things. J.D. McDonough, not J.D. from New York, although that would be cool. J.D. McDonough, the former Jordan Devlin, will be coming soon. They changed his name, obviously, so they could have the trademark. So J.D. McDonough, coming soon. Yo, you look at his vignettes. He gives me Finn Balor vibes. The way his look, the way he wrestles, his style, his physique, not as cut as Finn Balor, but he gives me Finn Balor vibes. I don't know how you feel about it, but to me, J.D. McDonough gives me Finn Balor vibes. Another thing that happened yesterday, I gotta give a shout out to AS7607 who was in the chat. You know, we watched a segment yesterday with Grayson Waller. He's got a basketball, and we believe he's got a couple of photos. And what happened was Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, nice teeth, Trick. You look like the black Chris Van Vliet. And I say that with love, complete compliment. I am very jealous of their teeth. I'm jealous of Grayson Waller's teeth. So anyway, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams are being interviewed. And Grayson Waller shows up with a basketball and some photos. Oh, Carmelo, I'm a big fan of yours. Could you autograph these things for me? And he's autographing them. And yesterday during the watch party, AS7607 says, you know, they should have done something where he snuck in there a contract and he signed the contract. And then he gets a title match. Lo and behold, later on, we have another segment where Carmelo Hayes is told about his match for the Great American Bash. He's like, what are you talking about? And, you know, I think Mackenzie Phillips, right? She's like, oh, yeah, no. You know, Grayson Waller signed the contract. You signed the contract. And he's like, what are you talking about? I didn't sign the contract. So I went back and I grabbed a screenshot. And if you look at it closely, you know, look, little things like this I love because that uses your brain. If you look at it closely, Carmelo Hayes is not paying attention. He's signing a couple of photos, but there is a white piece of paper right underneath, and he signs that as well. He doesn't look at it, and it's a contract. So as a result, they are going to fight at the Great American Bash. Nice teeth. Great segment. I like things like that. That's smart. Things you don't think about. All right, quick predictions. Great American Bash. There's only six matches. I think this is a very easy event to predict with the exception of one match. Creed Brothers, I believe, will retain the NXT tag titles over Roderick Strong and Damon Kemp. The big question mark now is, does Damon Kemp go full-blown heel or does he turn against Roderick Strong as well? We've talked about Roddy, you know, requesting his release, and WWE asked him to stay longer to help these guys get over. And I give Roddy Strong a lot of credit for all the work that he's been doing with these guys, but the beginning of the end is now here. So they will retain. Trick Williams versus Wes Lee. Man, Trick Williams is going to be a star in that main roster. I don't know who he reminds me of yet. That guy's got something. He has something. Trick Williams is going to be a star. I know everybody focuses on Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes is made as well. But Trick Williams has got something. But the way they've been doing his storyline, I think Wes Lee has to get the win here. Wes Lee, they got a little momentum with his character. I think they need to keep building on that. If Trick Williams loses, he doesn't lose. He's got momentum too, and it's not even forced. So I'm going with Wes Lee. Wendy Chu versus Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany Stratton has improved, but she has not improved that much yet. I would go with Wendy Chu to win. Now, the problem is, so far, everybody that we have predicted are baby faces. So you got to have a couple of heels win this. And based on these predictions, I only have one. Carmelo Hayes, I believe, will retain the NXT North American Championship over Grayson Waller. The question is, who interferes? Do we get someone from Chase University show up? Someone, I think, is going to interfere in this match, and that will segue Grayson Waller into a different feud. So I'm going with Carmelo Hayes to retain. Believe it or not, I'm going with Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez to win the NXT tag titles. Now, I know some of you out there feel that it's stupid that she won the breakout tournament and yet she chose to fight for the tag titles. I actually, and I'm not saying this to stick up for NXT, but I actually like the storyline. And the reason why I like that is because when she cut the promo a couple of weeks ago, she said, look, I'll get a title shot down the line, but I'm here with my best friend. I want to win the tag titles with my best friend. So she elected to go for the tag titles instead. She is still extremely young in her career. So her taking that choice right now, especially Cora Jade having some momentum, I like it. I like it. There's no reason to push Roxanne Perez for heavyweight title feud this quickly. You got Nikita Lyons and others that people want to see before that. So I like this. And I think it's time to take those tag titles off of Toxic Attraction. I think Cora Jane and Roxanne Perez are going to win. And that leaves Bron Breakker versus Cameron Grimes. There is no way that Bron Breakker is losing that championship to Cameron Grimes. Don't get me wrong. You know, Cameron Grimes has grown on me. You know, I don't like how much that they have groomed him. He doesn't look like, you know, that annoying, rich, wannabe rich guy, you know, like Cameron Grimes. He had such personality. If you're going to turn him back to a heel, you know, and you don't bring the personality with it, what are you left with? I mean, they trimmed him and groomed him because they're turning him babyface. They didn't want him to look like this annoying, sweaty, hairy, hot mess. But you groomed him, and now you're turning him heel again. I mean, maybe they don't turn him heel. Maybe this is just competitiveness for the championship. Maybe we get a goofy segment where they shake hands afterwards. I don't know. But if they're going to turn him heel, you got to bring his personality back. I mean, that's what kind of like grew on everybody. But Bron Breakker is going to retain. No question he's going to retain. And that is your Great American Bash. So I am looking at my notes, and there's only one other thing that I have to mention. 2 weeks ago, I had said on the show that the domestic violence charges against Jake Atlas were going to be dropped. If you remember, we talked about how there really was not a strong case to pursue it. And Jake Atlas got arrested more because he didn't cooperate with the police that were on the scene. There was an incident and there was alcohol involved. And we talked about it. And it's more like a tabloid story than anything else. But I said 2 weeks ago that, you know, the charges were going to be dropped because of lack of a case. And yesterday they were dropped. And they were dropped because of lack of a case. Some people were reporting that his significant other, who, you know, we don't mention on the show because personal relationship, they never made it public. Yes, you could Google it, get your answer. But, you know, I don't say it here. But, you know, some people are reporting that that person dropped the charges. That is not true. That is not true. They just didn't have a strong case. Now, hopefully Jake Atlas can rebound from this professionally. Because everybody that I talk to, I mean, it's only like four people, but everybody who I've talked to that know Jake Atlas personally have said almost the same exact thing. Jake Atlas is a really, really good guy, but he likes his partying. So unfortunately, too much partying, get your ass in trouble. This might be a wake-up call for him to dial it back a little bit. Because look, I mean, if you go back and you remember that incident, some of us question, like, why even call the police? Like, was he really in danger? Or is this relationship turned so sour that, you know, look, let me just call the police so he just gets out of my hair, because people do that. We've talked about that. But the thing is, you see, look how the media and AEW handled Jake Atlas. You know, AEW's like, he never signed with us. No, no. And the media did exactly what they were told. They painted this picture like, oh, no, no, no. He was just, you know, he was just per appearance. You know, he was an AEW guy. No, no, no. So they distanced themselves with him like this. You know, you think they're going to suddenly change their mind? No. I personally think within a month or two, I think Jake Atlas will rebound. You know, I mean, look, you know, shit happens. It was a fucked up incident. You know, I don't want the guy's career ruined over it. I mean, you know, look, I don't think he's in this territory. Oh, my God, that story would. I got to look up that ride. I got to look up that ride and see what fucking kiddie ride that Joey Ryan was working. Man. Somebody sent it to me right before we went live. So anyway, we're at an hour and 20 minutes. Yeah, I know it's the Jungle Cruise. I read the LA Times, but I got to look it up. I got to get some video of it. You know, there's tons of Disneyland footage online. So Sunday, I will show you the footage. You know, and if I'm, you know, have enough free time, maybe we'll kind of like Photoshop Joey Ryan into the video, sucking on a lollipop, standing right by the front door or the gate. That is kind of, you know, I don't know how to feel about that. You know, he was never convicted, but you know, when you have that many people come forward, you know, it does give you that really strange vibe. And let me tell you why, because I did see quite a few people tonight arguing about it, that look, he was never convicted of anything. Why should he lose his job over it? I don't want to get into it now. I'd rather talk about Sunday, but I will say this in closing with Joey Ryan. You know, when he made his apology, he said he did nothing wrong. And I think that's where the problem lies. Of course, you're not going to admit that you did anything wrong because, you know, people are trying to go after you. But I still would not have made the statement he did because he tried to normalize it. Oh, I like women. I like kissing. I like relationships. I'm a lonely person. I had depression. I just wanted to, you know, I just want to be loved, you know? So he kind of like felt in his mind he did nothing wrong. I think that's where it gets a little, you know, in the creepy territory. You get someone that, you know, hey, you know, it's indies, it's wrestling, everybody parties with everybody, you know, things go, you know, we drink and things go a little further, but it's consensual, but, you know, I'm a creep, I just wanted to get laid, I didn't want to get serious, I told them what they wanted to hear because I wanted to get my knob wet, blah, 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 blah. If you would have said that, people would have been like, okay, he's a horny guy, he's a dick, you know, I wouldn't date him, I wouldn't marry him, this and that, but he didn't do anything wrong. But instead, he tried to do the sympathy thing, and that's where it got into weird, creepy level. And would you want someone like that working at Disneyland? Joey Ryan screwed. Joey Ryan. All right. So if anybody has any pertinent questions about NXT or AEW, you're welcome to post it now. And then I'm going to get out of here in 7 minutes. We're going to leave this at exactly 90 minutes tonight. Monday, we went an extra hour. We had a lot of fun doing the show Monday, talking about Cena, reminiscing, a few other topics as well. Yesterday, we had a great Patreon episode as well for our Patreon family. Don't forget, tomorrow, Kev Castle will be on. And then Friday, let's do this. Before you do questions, we'll spend an extra 5 minutes, I promise you. Very quickly, yesterday, NXT Watch Party, somebody was going to win this double-signed photo giveaway, RK-Bro, an autographed photo of Randy Orton and an autographed photo of Riddle. And I tell you, I really love these photos. First of all, I wanted a photo of Riddle with a championship. I always wanted one or two in my collection, and I got that a while back. So we're going to give that away. But the Randy Orton one, man, I don't know. I just really like this picture. I never saw it before. You know, someone within WWE was very generous to send it to me. So someone is going to win both of those photos. Now, the cool thing is for Friday's watch party, last week we gave away the CM Punk photo. I got these from someone in AEW. He was nice enough to send me some CM Punk AEW signed photos and some Sting AEW signed photos. These are AEW photos. We gave a set away on Friday, from Friday. I'm doing it again this week because the person that sent to me sent me six of each. So I have more. So for everyone that said, oh man, I should have been in that watch party Friday, now you have an opportunity. So this Friday, SmackDown Rampage, you don't have to go to both, one or the other, both, whatever's up to you. But if you stop by, chat a little bit, you will be part of the giveaway. If you go on the floor and actually talk with everyone, you'll get two entries. So I double checked this twice. And by the way, Monday we gave away, what did we give away? Oh yeah, Monday we gave away the CM Punk Sting photo too. But apparently Neil Ray was only listed once on the wheel. So next Monday I'm going to do another spin. So everybody that was on the wheel this past Monday, you got a second chance. It's like WWE, second chance battle royal. We're going to do a second chance spin, and we're going to give an extra entry to Neil. So that'll be Monday. But now, let's spin this. Who is going to win the Randy Orton Riddle signed photos? Good luck to everyone. I know sometimes people get angry when someone wins more than once on a week. Hey, shit happens. Eric Williams. Congrats to Eric Williams. He gets the Riddle Randy Orton photos. So we'll do it again. We'll do it again. All right. Now we could do a couple of questions. And don't forget, Saturday morning at 10 a.m., I will be live to do some quick predictions. We'll do some match predictions. We'll talk about the possibilities of Naomi returning, the buzz around Bayley, the odds of possibly this power couple, Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch, both sweeping Money in the Bank. You know, it's very possible that this power couple, WWE's power couple, may win both briefcases. Can you pitch this? I'll give you a little teaser right now. I think Seth Rollins is winning it. I still love my storyline idea of Sami Zayn winning it and offering up the briefcase to Roman just to get suckered. But I just picture Seth Rollins every week, like dancing with the briefcase. By the way, I have the old school Money in the Bank briefcase. I have a bunch of briefcases in my office for like the last 4 years. Back 4 years ago, I got 6 or 7 of them sent to me. And I never gave them away. I don't remember if it was Joe Numbers or if it was Mish, but one of them, I sent them a computer and I didn't have a box to ship it in. So I think I shipped it in a Money in a Bank briefcase instead. But I know we gave away one. I actually have a women's Money in a Bank briefcase as well. So maybe we'll do that as a giveaway next week. When I go to work tomorrow, I'll see what I have in my office and maybe we'll do a briefcase giveaway next week. All right. Anybody have any quick questions? If you don't, then I could exit a little bit early for tonight. So Saturday morning, predictions. Saturday night, Money in a Bank recap. Sunday night, the Don Tony Show and the sit-down. We'll do a joint show. Benjamin says he doesn't think this title shot counted as using the contract. Cora Jade. No, you're right. Cora Jade, Roxanne Perez. Roxanne didn't actually cash in the contract. But the whole idea is that what people were saying is that how do you win the breakout tournament and not go after Mandy Rose? You understand what I'm saying? Like, you win the tournament, you go after the champion. And she got on the mic and said that, you know, I'll get an opportunity down the line, but I want to win the tag titles with my friend. I like that. Because it gives a little personality to Roxanne Perez. It builds that storyline friendship. I mean, it's a real life friendship, but it builds a storyline as well. This way down the line, if Cora Jade turns on Roxanne Perez, the fans will be like, what the fuck? Like, that would be like a, you know, I wouldn't put it on RK-Bro level. But there's so much dynamics that you add to this. And look, it's just the power of friendship. So that's why I like it. How about Seth Rollins? Well, we'll talk about Money in the Bank Saturday. But I think right now I'm undecided between Rollins and Zayn. I think I'm fantasizing about my storyline too much with Sami Zayn. I kind of feel Rollins is the more logical pick. I could picture him showing up on SmackDown, teasing the briefcase, you know, because Roman certainly ain't coming to Raw to tease it. Especially when he has the match with Brock, you know, I don't think anything is going to happen this quickly. You know, both belts are on the line with Brock, not one. So if Roman were to lose to Brock, both titles are gone. Then what happens to Drew McIntyre at Clash at the Castle? So, did I watch the show Heels? No, I have not watched it, Cappy. You know, I glanced at a couple of episodes. I saw the episode where CM Punk was on. I just never got into it. You know, when it first debuted, there was a lot of buzz around it. But the clips that I see, I don't know. I wasn't feeling it. All right. Couple of more. It'd be cool if we kept it AEW or NXT for tonight. We'll have Saturday morning. Predicts are going to take me 30 minutes. And we'll probably spend like another 30 minutes just discussing Money in the Bank and whatever else surrounding it. So we're going to talk a lot of scenarios, what could happen, you know, the odds is on the women's side. We don't even know who the last slot is, you know, on the men's side. You know, women is set. And right now, Lacey Evans is kind of like my favorite, but, you know, I'm still thinking about that Becky Lynch factor. But, you know, we still got to fill that last slot on Friday, so... By the way, with predictions contest this weekend for Patreon and the YouTube channel members, we have to wait for SmackDown because we don't know who the last entrance is for Money in the Bank. So late Friday night, I'll put the contest up, and you'll have until about 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon. It's only like 6 or 7 picks. It should take you 2 minutes to answer it. So do I think they're wasting MJF's heat right now? Well, let me answer it like that. I'm really glad you brought up MJF because Tony Khan was asked again at the scrum Sunday night and he refused to comment about it. Here's how I look at this. If MJF was gone from AEW, I would think Tony Khan would want that cloud and controversy away from AEW as quickly as possible. I know what you're all going to say based on what I just said. Well, how come WWE's not doing that with Sasha Banks? If she was released at the time people say that she was released, and I'm not saying that she wasn't, I don't know, but it will be funny if she ends up coming back and then people will be like, oh, she was released before they brought her back. You know, I don't know. But WWE has not mentioned it as well. Wouldn't you think they would want to clear that cloud too? But Tony Khan and WWE are two totally different entities. You know, WWE is a publicly traded company, and Tony Khan, you know, he speaks for himself personally more than anything else. I would think if MJF was no longer in AEW, I would think Tony Khan would want to just get that out there so everybody stop talking about MJF. The fact that he's like, I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to talk about it, means that he's still there. And they need to bring him back to TV. They need to incorporate that back. They obviously have a plan somewhere. I don't know what that plan is. But in my opinion, you know, they didn't have any permanent damage with New Japan. But there's no question that a lot of regular fans had no interest in New Japan. So focus on your own stars now. Focus on your own talent now. Start building on AEW. You can't, you know, now they're going to start building Ring of Honor. You know, if I was AEW, then make Rampage Ring of Honor's stuff and put Dynamite everything else. And if you say to me there's not enough hours for footage, well, that's AEW's problem, not ours. Okay. Does Rampage need to become a longer show? Honestly, no. If you can't get a lot of viewers to tune into 1 hour, how are you going to get them to tune into two? You know, think about it. They're not even getting 500,000 viewers, and they're back on their regular time slot. A lot of viewers have decided, I have better things to do on Friday night. Do I think a lot of the viewers that don't watch Friday nights anymore, do I think they still watch Rampage? Absolutely. But it's not must-see TV for them on a Friday night. I think they got to move it to 7 p.m. Fridays. I know I'm the only person online that keeps annoying all of you out there week after week saying that. I truly believe if it's a lead into SmackDown, SmackDown gets 2 million viewers. If you have wrestling on, even if a third of them say, you know what, Let me watch the last 15 minutes of Rampage. I heard it's a good main event. You get even 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 WWE viewers to just watch a little Rampage before SmackDown starts. I think you might convert some people to watch Rampage in the future. Rampage leading into SmackDown, to me, is a hell of a lot better than Rampage following SmackDown, especially after you just witnessed 2 hours of a totally different type of entertainment. So you go into Friday night. You now watch 2 hours of WWE. You now are in the sports entertainment WWE mindset. Now you're going to switch over to Rampage, which has got a whole different culture to it. And they don't mix all that well. So you have your fans on a Friday night, the first thing they see is the AEW culture. That's what I would do. How much further will they push until pro wrestling is oversaturated the market? Who's they? I don't know who they is. I don't think the market is oversaturated. The smaller promotions are fighting over, I hate to say it, the scraps. They're fighting over the fans that watch a ton of wrestling. They're fighting over this very small group of fans out there. You know, CM Punk, I told you a few times, AEW does not want you to remember that quote. When Tony Khan created Rampage, he said that he wanted to attract those viewers that fell out of love of wrestling. And then CM Punk made a quote 3 or 4 months later that he doesn't think that there are wrestling fans sitting in the boondocks that are not watching wrestling right now, you know, to bring back. Wrestling fans are watching something. You know, there isn't this million, even 300,000 wrestling fans that just stopped watching wrestling and Rampage is going to draw them back. So you see Impact, you see New Japan so far in the United States, they're drawing shit numbers. No matter who they bring in, they draw the same numbers. Let's see what bounce New Japan has on Access this week. Why isn't AEW allowing like a match or two featuring New Japan stars to air on New Japan's Access show? So I don't think it's oversaturated. Fans made a pretty clear-cut decision what they want to watch. And it's mostly AEW or WWE. Everything else is tiny. So it's not oversaturating. Look, I hate to say it like this, but if all those small companies went out of business, WWE and AEW's rating would not go up. They would not go up. If Impact was, or MLW or New Japan, the United States, wherever it is, if they had like these wrestlers on the sidelines, that if these companies went out of business, that those fans would flock to WWE. You don't think that those fans are not already watching WWE? The ratings would not change. That's why Cody signed with WWE. Did the ratings get boosted big time? No, because no one person is going to blow those ratings away. What Cody does is Cody just makes, it's like having a awesome pitching staff. You have a crazy-ass relief pitching staff on a baseball team, and you add another great pitcher to that team. You probably could win and do just fine without that pitcher, but it just strengthens. It just adds. So, happy anniversary, SRH John 07, and you're very welcome, my friend. Very welcome. Thank you for the kind words. And 2 more minutes and we're out of here. I know I sound like 3 minute warning. 3 minutes and we're out of here. Still remember that with Bischoff when he dressed as the wedding guy?
Did someone say 3 minutes?
I know it doesn't sound like him. I'd have to hear it first. Benjamin thinks wrestling is oversaturated. Too much wrestling? With wrestling being as unpopular as ever? I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that at all. You know, it's coming down to two promotions. It's sad to see Impact bring in the Briscoes, Jay White, Jonah, and others, and the ratings don't change. You know, if I'm Impact Wrestling and I can't change the ratings with those guys, I would just put the lowest of the low financially on TV. I'm still going to draw 100,000 viewers, but it's surprising. See how quickly that Wrestle House crap like is like faded amongst the IWC? They were trying throwing shit on the wall, thinking like, oh, this is going to do it. And nothing, nothing did it. And the sad thing about it is Impact Wrestling right now is pretty damn good. They're very, very organized, very tight, and they really have a nice nucleus. You know, it's just they hurt their identity. I don't know if it's repairable. All right. I think we're going to jet out of here because we're slowly, I see everybody talking Money in the Bank. I don't blame you. You know, this Saturday's pay-per-view will be a lot of fun. So we will definitely talk. We have plenty of time to talk about it this weekend. So one last plug, Saturday morning, if you would like to join me, 10 a.m. Eastern, I will be here giving predictions. We will also maybe do a little fantasy, you know, what if Bayley returned? What if Naomi returned? You know, we'll also know who is going to be that last spot in the men's Money in the Bank. Would it be Mustafa Ali? Could it be, you know, someone that no one is expecting at all? Could it be a surprise? Maybe it's a maximum male model. I don't know. Yeah, we'll have plenty of time to do predictions. And then Saturday night, I'll be back here with the recap. Sunday night, we'll do the Don Tony show, and we'll split it with the sit-down. So we'll talk news the first half of the show, and the other half of the show will be like a whole bunch of Q&A and interactive and all that good shit. So, and then don't forget, this Friday, the watch parties. And one more time, I'm going to be giving away this CM Punk AEW photo and this Sting AEW signed photo. So you have to be there to be part of it. Everyone, it's been fun. Have a great night. Thank you, as always, for the support. If you enjoyed tonight's show on the way out, hit that thumbs up. If you have any comments, please post it. I see everybody's comments, and slowly I'm catching up and responding, and everyone else sees what you write as well. And I thank you, as always, for the support. So everyone, be well. Much love, and I'll catch you all again either Friday night for the watch parties or Saturday morning, Money in the Bank predictions. Be well.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.